This was at the end of our three-week block in Roby, and there's a couple hundred students there and their families. And yes, the toilet paper is a permanent decoration. And a very special moment for them. And then in Uganda, we were on our own, but we partnered quite a bit with an organization called Sunrise Ministries, and some of us here are familiar with the Sunrise Baby Home through what Grandview Church is doing. So you'll hear more about that. Some people say, actually this was the question the interviewer said, why would you do that? Why would you want to? Why would you want to leave what you have? Why would you take that risk? Just the big why. And I thought this picture encapsulated some of the why. What do you notice about that? Hips, yeah. So, you know, different things are more important in different places in the world. And here, when they try and sell you things, they're not going to accentuate it quite like that is. They want to sell you on slim, but not there. No, you can say, my, you're looking fat, and it's a compliment. It's very refreshing. I try not to say it here. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to get out of our culture and into a different culture and let that make a mark on us. And it has. And we wanted to be a blessing as we went and to listen to the voice of God and be Spirit-led Christians. Well, how did you do that is a question I think a lot of people want to ask, but they don't because Canadians don't generally ask each other about money. And what's next here? Oh, yes. So we ate a lot of rice. Basically, as a public school teacher, we have this neat opportunity to do a deferred salary leave. So we took 2/3 of our salary for 2 years, and 1/3 was banked. And then while away, we still had the same amount of money, 2/3 of our salary, banked to live off of. It was essentially like living on half of our gross income. And we did some math and thought, maybe it's possible. And we're almost finished that 3 years, and it looks like it's been possible. So that's how we did it. Well, kids, you always ask, did you see any animals? And I have to show you some animals. A vervet monkey like this stole some food out of Elena's hand. Out of Dietrich's hand. What did it steal? A granola bar? Or peanuts? Almonds. Sneaky and fast. This is an African rock python, and I almost stepped on its head. Thanks to God that I didn't. It would have given me a nasty bite if I upset it. But it went away. Thanks to God, this crocodile was on the other side of the Nile, and it's extremely zoom-lensed to get this shot. It's a big one. Thanks to God that these Ethiopian nomadic camel herders didn't shoot at us when we took the picture because they said don't take any pictures, or they'll shoot at you. This is a true African cow. Look at the size of those. Antlers? Horns. this is typical driving in Ethiopia. You have to be ready to hit the brakes because the animals are not penned in. And typically, going up into the town of Asela, where we were, this would happen every trip. The goats would be moving somewhere. And you just have to wait. A young giraffe having a little rest. Got to see baby white rhinos that are quite vulnerable because the tusks go for $65,000 a pound. So poaching is a big issue. Saw a hippo running. They're actually very fast. These Cape buffalo are staring at us. That's usually how people stared at us, too. We really stood out. We were in a few areas where we were definitely the first Caucasians to that folks set eyes on, and definitely the first Caucasian children. So that was fun. We were fortunate enough to see a lioness who was very calm because she just had an antelope snack. We saw the antelope first and knew there would probably be a lion around. Look at this elephant's trunk. It's agitated and it's trying to intimidate us or something, and we need to drive off soon. And these amazing animals, most Ethiopians and Ugandans will never see them because they're poached out and they're in game parks and they can't afford to go there. So it's their own, you know, it's their own home. Can you imagine being here in Canada and never having seen something that you've seen, like a beaver or, you know, a moose? Sorry if you haven't seen a moose, but it's possible, okay? But this, everyone can see. This is a marabou stork. And they're about 6 feet tall. And they're often seen picking around the garbage. But if you're roasting some meat and you leave it unattended in your backyard, they could come and take it. You also need to keep an eye on your young babies. Okay. So Africa can be a very wild place in lots of ways, and people have asked, what is it like to live there? Oh, because the stork can come and take it. Yeah. Just like it might take your barbecued lunch. No, they won't deliver it to someone else's doorstep. People have asked, what's it like to live there? And the answer to that is huge, and I guess that's what I found myself preparing for you for the remainder of our time. Ethiopia had beautiful places like that. We were at high altitude and wore pants and sweaters most of the time where we were. When we first arrived, I was smiling like Tiffany Robotham encouraged me to, and I managed to smile for quite a few months until it started to wear out. We were greeted by Michael Alamu's sister, Sisai, and driven by his brother, Tamarat. And we were thankful we didn't have to stay in this place. I don't think Jim Whitmer would meet his building codes. But instead, we were with Michael's other brother, Ketema, behind safe gates. We were glad we didn't have to go all the way to our next destination in something like this, though it was possible. Or like this, a bajaj, a little three-wheeled car. And as we went, we started to experience some of the beauty of Africa, the acacia trees, which in Ethiopia and Amharic they call grar zaf, and grass roofs and mud huts became normal. But we were spoiled North Americans, and we stayed in these quite nice accommodations, which you may have seen through Jeremy's pictures if he showed some when he returned, with our 24/7 guards. And we made ourselves comfortable inside the korokoro fence, the steel fence, to keep the hyenas out at night. You don't go out at night, especially alone. And one of the themes of our time was immersion. We just wanted to be present, be neighbors, be friends, have our eyes and ears open to the people and the things around us, be willing to absorb it, learn it. And so we began to do that. We played with the kids in the neighborhood. And I'd go for a run, and usually I'd have between 3 and 12 kids with me. This was one of my favorites on the bottom there. Notice little Tekalenya doesn't have shoes on. He ran 30 minutes on rocks with me in bare feet. And Jera and Shiro, which some of you have had in our home, we didn't have it all the time. The Christian Horizons tried to treat us like North Americans, but we were happy with that. You have to watch where you step. Should I explain that one too? Because animals are everywhere, and so you just have to be careful where you put your feet. But it's beautiful in Ethiopia, in where we were. We had some young boys who always took care of us, made sure we didn't get lost, watched our step. And if they felt like going for a swim, because it was the rainy season, there was water, they would strip off all their clothes and go swimming. And I think Elena would prefer if you didn't ask her about that. As we were teaching our program, we had three young engineering students who were our translators. This is Amadine, and this is Danye and Sisai. And they became the people who were dearest to us in our entire time away, I think we would say. Going to the market, it looks different than Zaire's, looks different than the Kitchener Market. These people don't even have stalls. They're just selling from a space, which actually they have to rent that space on the soil. But we were very much tourists in the market in Ethiopia. This is one of my favorite pictures, cayenne pepper. Beautiful. But it's all there. There's no box stores. You can find pretty much everything you seem to need at the market. I think Val had her sandals stitched up at least two times in Ethiopia by someone like that. The boys aren't concerned about which pair of shoes they might wear from that pile. Color's irrelevant. If it's something to cover their feet, they'll wear it. So there's no fashion faux pas. This is Tesfaye. As our journey went along in Africa, we met more and more people in need and had to narrow where we engage and where we didn't. And that took a lot of discernment, and we got comfortable saying no a lot because we had to. But Tesfaye was someone we met in need early on, and God really impressed on Val to help this boy. He was in our classes, although he looks too old to be at an elementary level class of English. And he was carrying bundles of firewood to try and get enough to buy food. And he was staying in a vulnerable place. He had a little space about the size of two mattresses, single mattresses, but he was the person he was renting from was taking advantage of him. And so we decided to have our friends, who live here on the right, rent him a room on the left. And we could easily find mattresses at the market. And so now he stays in this room, which is safer, and he has a mentor, the man on the top left, Endesho. And he's able to continue school for now. And so we sort of arranged a private sponsorship. So as long as these guys can communicate with us through online, we'll send some money once a year. And so it's like we've adopted Tesfaye. Ethiopia is known for its coffee, and we were part of many coffee ceremonies, and the slow roasting just fills the room, and it's amazing. And someone tends that the whole time, part of the tradition and their appreciation and their wonderful hospitality. This is Michael's other brother. Seeing a trend here, it's a big family. Nagash, who some of you probably prayed for when he had his brain cancer. And we were hosted in his home. It looks quite nice, doesn't it? Actually, the walls are mud. So you've got electricity run through a mud home. They build them really well there. And this would be a very generous spread of food. Play is simple. This is Dietrich's friend Ashenafi jumping. And teenagers are happy to have a jump rope. It doesn't take more than that. They seize the moment, and they're good at it. Val's not bad either. Recognize those guys? Dancing is highly valued in Ethiopia, and Jared's doing the best he can there, but he's doing some other dance, I think. Now you can see Steph on the top right. She's smiling. But we were well hosted by Christian Horizons and by the community there. There's a good relationship there with the community. They're doing good work. And the Gibbons and the Shewarts just jumped right in and tried to embrace all that was there. And in Ethiopia, we just really will remember it for the warmth and the smiles and the kindness. As teachers, we had to set some goals for the English goals for our students. And they know some things on paper, but no confidence to speak out. And so we really tried to instill that, because that's a huge gift. If they can raise their level of English, that opens up a world of opportunities. And so we tried to instill confidence and love for learning, and I think that shows in their smiles there. We provided a very different educational experience than what their normal blackboard and copy and stick holding teacher would administer. Now, I'm holding a stick there, but I didn't hit any kids, okay? Usually I use the blackboard, but this was a special treat. There was one power line going to the administrator's office, and we unhooked what was there and hooked up an outlet and ran power to our things and taught for a couple of days there on the cracked mud walls in a village school. And Val's always at her best with students. And can you picture here, this is primarily Muslim students in a rural school on our Canada-themed day doing an East Coast Canadian dance to Tell My Ma. Tell My Ma. Dun, 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 dun. But it worked. It worked. And this is Alice the Camel. So, you know, these are transferable skills. But we got some positive feedback. Val and John, I like. In this location, Roby, we would sometimes go for a run on our between the morning and afternoon program, and usually there would be 20, 50, 100 kids that would join us for our lunchtime run. And so that became, hey, let's make this more. At the graduation day, let's host an event. And so we hosted a 3-kilometer run, and it was just a blast. Now, when I first saw this plate of food from across a room, I thought, yes, finally, baking. The light-colored, I thought it was pastry. Now, this is not beside the barbecue. This is on the serving table. And let me tell you, it's something to see a beautiful woman with a full plate of raw meat. Ethiopians eat raw meat. I guess they have the digestive enzymes for it. They'll have it at special occasions. Yes, Michael Alamu eats raw meat sometimes. But I didn't. So we didn't fully engage the culture, but we walked in their mud called Chika. And in this place where we were a rarity, if we started enjoying a game of table tennis, loser pays, by the way, 4 cents, there would be 100 people around watching us. And we had to just find a way to be comfortable with that and get used to that. We appreciated things like that by doing things like that, celebrating mezcal and other holidays. Ethiopians are usually either Muslim or Christian, Ethiopian Orthodox. And I had the privilege of going to a service with my friend Sise on the right. And this is essentially David on the left, Dawit. And he's the accountant for CH at that location. And he's also an Orthodox, Ethiopian Orthodox priest. So he took me to his location, and I put my chin on that cane. Just prayed for a while. I didn't know what they were saying. But everything in the building had significance. There was a pink umbrella. There were burning incense with ashes shaking out of it that would actually leave little burn marks on the carpet, and I had a hard time not laughing about that. But everything had significance. And so instead of reading the Bible, they showed the Bible. And they have a deep regard for God and trust in God. We had inspiring moments like this little guy who only has one leg but is kicking the ball out of the air on his crutches. That's in their Roby compound, CHS. This man attended our elementary classes. I don't know how old Shallow is, but he was quite a character, and he was hungry to grow his English. And then there was Yeshi, who looks a little like Mother Teresa, don't you think? And she is just like Mother Teresa, actually. She runs a kindergarten program for kids who have no access to school, and she has virtually no funding, and she runs two little rooms out of the place that she rents. And we were able to pass on some gifts to her from folks back home. But inspiring people, deeply content, deeply determined to entrust themselves to God. like this guy. So again, one of our interpreters, Sisai, and we celebrated his 22nd birthday. It was the first time a birthday had ever been celebrated for him. So he was like a little kid. And he grew up in the Christian Horizons boys' home. He lives with his brother, who's 31 and finally finishing high school because of obstacles. And do I have a picture? They sleep in this room. They share a single mattress. They borrowed this furniture to host us. And they spent an exorbitant percentage of their income to be able to put this food on the table. But the amazing thing about it was just the heart. There was no holding back, complete abandonment to want to do this for us, complete contentment with whatever God provides, more or less, good or bad, complete trust in God's outcome. So just a beautiful demonstration of generosity and contentment to us. He bought us a cake. They don't eat cake. and it was exorbitant for him. This is Michael Alamu's niece, and we left her with a library that she can now lend to her community. Hiwat is her name. And this is the CH building. And I didn't usually dress like that. I don't actually usually dress like this either. But this was a gift from CH, an Oromo outfit. So I put it on for the picture, and that was nice. This is one of my favorite pictures from Africa, and we had developed these relationships as much as we could in 3 months, and given ourselves and received back, and we wanted to finish with the community, with our neighbors somehow. I said, I want to have a fire. No, not in the compound. We're not inviting people. Put it out on the road. This shows people's appreciation to come and dance together, and they knew we were leaving the next morning. Second Corinthians 1:12. Our conscience testifies that we have conducted ourselves in the world, and especially in our relations with you, in the holiness and sincerity that are from God. We have done so not according to our worldly wisdom, but according to God's grace. That's what we want to say, right? Wherever we're engaged in other people's lives, at the end of it, at the end of the moment, or the hour, or the day, or the season, we want to be able to say we conducted ourselves in holiness and sincerity from God. And we were full of grace towards you so that the ministry could be complete. And we hope that's true of what we did, and we all want that. Well, in Uganda, things were different. It's a place where you see little babies playing with 9-inch kitchen knives, and this didn't last long, actually. But that's Elena with a machete trimming the hedges. Once. We lived in the top of what you see there, near the Nile. And this is the gate to our compound. Security was an issue. We had to be wise. We're now independent. And though we had support around us, it was a different ballgame. So this time, instead of being a tourist going to the market, we were shopping at the market, and we're navigating conversions and prices and bartering and hygiene. So we said yes to the cabbage, garlic, and potatoes, and no to the little salted minnows. In Uganda, our big challenge was how do we engage? It's harder to engage here. In Ethiopia, they had a relationship with Christian Horizons, and they knew some boundaries of what would work. But in Uganda, there was habitual asking and mixed truth and untruth, and you want to help people, but there's an end to it. And so it was very difficult to know when to and when not to. And so we found ways that we could, and this lady was near the vendor we usually bought from, and so whenever we bought tomatoes, we'd pay for five and take four bags. This lady is Annette, and this is where we would buy our grains, and we facilitated a $600 loan for her, which was great because she could buy product in the cheap season, but then sell it for more in the months down the way. But we learned together over the course of 8 months that she actually didn't have the capacity to repay the loan except over a long period of time. So we rolled that into a feeding program for two boys you'll meet later. This is the hardware store. It's a little different than Home Depot, eh, Randall? We lived in a compound, and this is essentially the view from our kitchen window, so we had a neighbor within our compound. You just got used to having people around. I had a hard time finding a picture of that place without a naked baby on it. And so this is actually our kitchen floor. And this is our bathroom. There were lots of ways for chickens to get in the house, through the bars or in the back door, and it was Dietrich's job to get them out. Sometimes it didn't turn out so good for them. They became dinner, and it was also the boys' responsibility to do the slaughtering. Now, I've wore some funny clothes in the last year. This is our friend Richard, and Richard is engaged, but it's hard to become engaged in Uganda. It's expensive. Their traditions are expensive. It's really unreasonable. And he had to go to the bride's family and negotiate. And so I went as his brother because he's an orphan. Think they believed me? I said I'm like a brother to him. And we all sat very quiet and humble, which sent the message that apparently that was helpful. I don't know. After the side mirrors and taillights were stolen off the van I bought there, actually I still own a van in Africa. We're trying to sell it. Everything's slow. But this is our guard, which we hired Samuel, and Samuel spent every night thereafter outside our house. The going rate for a guard is $40 a month. We increased that. But he was really happy to have the job. And we were really happy to have him kill the green mamba that slithered up on our porch. It only happened once, but apparently they can jump and really cause you problems if they bite you. We got really good at math and conversions. One U.S. dollar is 2,500 Ugandan shillings. So the purple 10,000 is $4. The red 20,000 is $8. And this is $20. Add 10% due to Canadian exchange. So we're trying to navigate this place called Uganda and engage people's lives and be a blessing. But there are so many realities that are a barrier to that. This is a place where having a place to fill your jerry can is a luxury, and you pay for it. Having a bicycle to carry your water to your household is a luxury. This is a viable way to dry your laundry and to get around. And yes, I drove in places like that and to get around. But we tried, you know. I didn't carry things on my head. It's too dome-like. That's why it's sideways. I found one of the flat edges, flat sides. But this sort of symbolized how we tried to behave with those we met. So this is Sunrise Church, and this is where I did some preaching and teaching. And this was our was normal for us. It was hot. I said to this church one time, in North America, in and out of the church, our people will ask the question, does God exist? And they laughed, a deep belly laugh, like I had just told the funniest joke they ever heard. Does God exist? Because they know, and they're dependent. So that question is just silly. While in Uganda, Sunrise ran three locations, Baby's Home, Children's Home, and Girls' Home. And we gravitated towards the Girls' Home. They were close by, and we had some teaching opportunities with them. Some of you know Dama Lee, so I threw a picture in there of her. She's the lead of the organization. They're comfortable with proximity. And so these are 23 girls that have been rescued from slum area and now live under the care of Sunrise Ministries, and they're doing a good job. While we were there, some sewing machines came, were donated, and now they're sewing to try and fund, pay the rent, buy food. And isn't that the most amazing smile, Irene? And our role was just to kind of add value to their lives. So we could do things that were beyond normal for them. Their normal would be have a cup of millet porridge in the morning, eat beans and pasho, clean the compound, play a few games in the compound. Some of them get to go to school. But not tea parties with tea with milk in it. That was a luxury. And I enjoyed breaking Canadian transportation laws. I think we fit 17 people in a small minivan. Listen closely. There's a voice. There's their voices, and there's another voice. Recognize that other voice that they were echoing with? We were on Skype with Julie Prince, and she's singing with them. So they're mesmerized. They're looking at, wow, like how is this even possible? A computer, communication to the other side of the world. Basically, most of the profound impact things that happened through our family there were because of my wife. And this is a picture of that. She just took a small group of these girls and tutored them. And that we were at home a lot, and we helped with some of the teaching as well. The kids did, I did. But it was mostly Val, and she saved some of them 2 years of their life because they were able to enter school at grade 3 instead of grade 1. And she instilled in them the ability to learn, not just to become a passive person just sitting in a school bench. And so these were the ones that were dearest to us. Beside Val is Monday, who has had polio and has a fused leg. And she became Elena's closest friend. And the one dearest to me is top right. This is Sarah. Sarah actually wasn't at the Marembe Cottage when we arrived, but a couple weeks later she arrived. She was in a sort of a pseudo-slavery situation by her aunt. She was made to work all the time, and she was owned. The woman was arrested, and the police brought her to Marembe, and no English. And we had the privilege of showing her how to make letters and sharing love with her. And just, can you imagine going from that to this and just hopefully work to restore her heart. And now she's in grade 3, even though she's maybe 15 or so. This is Margaret. Margaret is the reason there's a Marembe, because though she lives in a slum, she gathered together these vulnerable girls who were picking garbage and asking for money and tried to find safe places for them to stay. So she's like though she's only 15, she's like the mother to them. And again, through Val was looking at this holistically and wanted to help the whole family. So this is where they're from. And so we met Mom, the older sister, found school funding for them, younger brother, Harriet and Francis. And then we meet the boys. Okay, well, what do we do for the boys? Okay, we found school funding for them through Canadian donors. And they came to visit us on Sunday afternoons, and these are the boys who are getting their food from Annette. And just try to, whatever you try to do, do it well. You know, say no to a lot, but then when you say yes, try to do a good job.
No, again.
My name is Francis. Thank you for my school fees, for paying me my school fees.
What is your best subject?
My best subject is math. The worst subject is science. Thank you, Golden Park. Good night.
Val's public school provided the fees for that. But at the end of our visit, we send them home with bags of food, but they go back to that slum. That's where they're going to sleep. They're going to sleep on the dirt or on the canvas, and they're going to sneak out at night and do their bathing in the garden because there is no place to bathe. They're going to do it with dirty water. And those are hard things. Some of you followed the blog, and this is Daystar School. Graduation, actually, where everyone wears their best clothes, best shoes, and are excited to have this every day, pasho, white corn, and beans. I got to write a check for $5,562,000, but it wasn't U.S. dollars, unfortunately. It's about $2,400 to help them overcome their shortfall in funding for the pasho and beans. Some people here donated some money and bought these boys who are dorming there mattresses to sleep on. So we loaded them up and kept the side doors open and drove through town like that. And they're very happy and they thank you. We were also able to organize some Christmas food giveaways. And just the appreciation is unbelievable. It was one of my favorite times packing up the food. And the food was going to these kids. Now, those are teachers from the school, and they're basically at school every day from early till late, and they're happy to do that. They're not thinking about their personal schedules, although they don't have as many things to distract them. So on Saturday, they're running a gospel program in the Massese slum where kids take care of kids, and it's dirty and crazy, but they come with loving hearts like I can't say I did. I was amazed at their conduct. And you might ask, well, how does one do that? For the joy of the Lord is your strength, right? And there's, in the midst of any circumstance, there is joy. Now, I can't finish without telling you about Nalongo. I wrote extensively on the blog, and if you follow that or you can read that, it's still up. But Nalongo, we had a housekeeper, okay? Now, don't get jealous. It's expected that you would pay someone to do some, wash was manual, and do some cooking and cleaning. So then we got to know this person who was hired by Sunrise for us. And you start to get to know the needs. So you send food home, and you learn that she has a nursing baby. So, okay, go home, nurse, whenever you need to. It's okay. And then finally we saw where she was living, only a 15-minute walk from where we were. They came to me one day and said, we don't have room. We basically have a 6-foot by 6-foot hut, and they're sleeping on the floor. There's not room for all of us. There's 6 kids and a mom. So we had someone build them this second hut so some could sleep over there and some could sleep here. It was maybe, I don't know, 150 US. There's another hardware store I tried to keep the naked baby out of the way. So in engaging this family, because they're in your house, they're serving you, they're working for you, and as a Christian, you have to, you know, you can just wall yourself off to the people around you, but no, you can't do that. You have to be discerning and say, what's my level of engagement with this person, whether it's an employee, whether it doesn't matter. You have a responsibility to pray that through, and we did with her. And so in addition to what I've already said, we started asking the question, what would it take to get her off government land where she's vulnerable and the house can be knocked down any day and where it's not safe and it's not hygienic? And that led to a really long, frustrating process. But I actually bought land in Africa, a small piece, and I sat and haggled with village tribe leaders and local councils, and found out after I bought it that we only own what's on top. We don't own what's underneath. So there's another owner to that land, but we tried to work that out. having a latrine, basically a 40-foot hole in the ground and a hole to it, is a luxury. Became known as the house with the crooked door. It was difficult to ensure quality workmanship. And even the people that I put in place to ensure that, it was hard to know who was ripping you off and who was lying to you, and the costs were rising. I thought we had some donor money to buy the land. It's about around 2,000. I thought we could put a house on it for 3,000 or 4,000, which I was committed to do. That was fine. But the cost grew to 12,000. But that's okay. And so now this family's life has changed. They have property and they have a safe place and they're not vulnerable. And they have an organization that's going to back them up. This is our ceremony here, just explaining our story, explaining what it took to pull it off, and praying for the house, and explaining some things. The builders wanted to sacrifice a chicken for the foundation and for the roof, and we had to head things like that off. And it was a great door to communicate how Christ is our ultimate sacrifice. We're not afraid. There's a lot of fear in Uganda. So there's the house. And you wouldn't maybe want to live there, but to them it's castle. If you Google Regal Adventures, you can read sort of the humorous unrolling of that. Lastly, some of you were really interested in Naluoli and Pastor Andrew. Pastor Andrew is the person that I grew closest to during that time, the most capable of training others in the Bible. There may be an opportunity in the future to provide Bibles for his people. He wants to go back to his village and establish a ministry there. And he's capable. He just needs finances. But this is his home village. This is where he wants to go back to. How about you? You want to move there? You could buy that plot on the left. Everywhere we went, there was a piece of home. There's a, 1980s Blue Jays jacket at the pastor's conference. This is their church. They'd probably like to have doors and windows, but they don't really need them. The climate's okay. And that's where the video clip was that you saw. I had no trouble finding a parking space. I hear some of you are worried about parking here. I was the only one who drove. And I guess church starts around 9, 9:30, but that's who's there, and they're doing some small Bible study. Really gets rolling around noon and finishes up around 2. If you need to go to the bathroom, it's no problem. Just walk out to the back. Hope nobody else is back there. Can feel free to ululate anytime as well. So that was where we hosted the pastor's conference, and I've never seen a group of people so hungry for truth. The people who call themselves pastors but don't own Bibles, they're going off the teaching that they've heard on radio or through other pastors. So there's a lot of false teaching and a lot of misconstrued ideas, and there's a real need for Bibles and for training. But hunger. Never seen hunger they for the word like that. They would hold the Bible in their hand, and they after our teaching, just basic teaching, inductive Bible study, what does the text say? What did it mean in that time and culture? How does it apply to, what's the principle? What's the redeeming direction in the scripture? And how do I apply it to my life, to my family, to my community? And the teaching from the life of David, just be amazed. We've had this, but we've never seen it before, and it was awesome. Anyway, the last question that people ask were, "Were you a missionary?" And I always hesitate when I answer this, because what is a missionary? I'm wearing a weird shirt. Does that make me a missionary? I went across the Atlantic. People travel all over the world all the time now. I never considered myself a missionary any more than I did before I left. And it's this idea I've been sharing in the scriptures that we want to be able to say at the end of the day we conducted ourselves in holiness, and we presented the word of God, and we were listening, and we were faithful right where we were. So every Christian is a missionary. It's possible to sacrifice. You can put things out of your life. You can say no to some things, which opens up a yes to other things. Things are possible. Colossians 3:1-3. Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. This was a meaningful scripture to Val while we were away. So was verse 15 and to 17. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom, and as you sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs with gratitude in your heart to God. And whatever you do, whether in word or in deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, giving thanks to God the Father through him. That's missionary stuff. So, that's an overview of our trip. It was really hard to do, and I wanted to put enough there that you could see the variety and hear enough stories. I was trusting today that each in your, wherever you're at, that would touch you in a unique way. And I hope that you're blessed by that. And we want to thank you again for being family to us. And so God bless you.
Thank you, John. We're going to ask you to stand and just sing Take My Life and Let It Be. And I think it's it sort of sums up so much of what we've seen represented in these stories and these people's lives and in John and Val's life and in each of our lives too. And it's right. If we call ourselves a Christian, we are a mini Christ. That's what it means, is little Christ. And so we go forth and we live as a missionary in every part of our lives. And so let's just do this in response, a prayer to the Lord. Just take me.